It's a funny place to be, stuck in a seemingly mundane world with an inner knowing that the universe is so much more than our mortal minds can comprehend. Yet we all have the capacity to know peace and our oneness with the wholeness of life. And through these interviews, discussions, and reflections, it is my intention to share this possibility. I'm Ryan Kurzak, and this is the Kriya Yoga Podcast. I've been asked many times how the practice of Kriya Yoga relates specifically to astrology. Now, I'm asked this question mainly because I am an astrologer, or used to be an astrologer, who practiced Kriya Yoga, still practice Kriya Yoga. And in the book, The Art and Science of Vedic Astrology, which I co-wrote with Richard Fish, there's a description in there about how the zodiac and the planets relate to the chakras within the spine. And I was fortunate in that after I began learning Kriya Yoga, I quickly found Jyotish or Vedic astrology, the science of astrology. And on one of my visits to Center for Spiritual Awareness, I happened to meet Richard Fish, who had been a Western astrologer and a Vedic astrologer, probably for more years than I had been alive at that point in time. And he would often speak of Kriya Yoga as though it was the true inner astrology. And it often reverberated with the words of Swami Sri Yukteswar in that same vein. And it's important to keep in mind that Richard Fish was also an ordained Kriya Yoga teacher by way of Roy Eugene Davis. So to get into this, I'm going to start with a reading from Autobiography of a Yogi. This is from the original version where Paramahansa Yogananda writes about Sri Yukteswar's explanation related to Kriya Yoga, and in this Sri Yukteswar goes on to discuss how it relates to astrology. So Sri Yukteswar says that Kriya Yoga is an instrument through which human evolution can be quickened. Sri Yukteswar explained to his students, the ancient yogis discovered that the secret of cosmic consciousness is intimately linked with breath mastery. This is India's unique and deathless contribution to the world's treasury of knowledge. The life force, which is ordinarily absorbed in maintaining the heart pump, must be freed from higher activities by a method of calming and stilling the ceaseless demands of the breath. The Kriya Yogi mentally directs his life force or life energy to revolve upward and downward around the six spinal centers. This is the medullary, cervical, dorsal, lumbar, sacral, and coccygeal plexus. These correspond to the 12 astral signs of the zodiac, the symbolic cosmic person. 1.5 minute of revolution of energy around the sensitive spinal cord of man or humanity or humans affects subtle progress in evolution. That half minute of Kriya equals 1 year of natural spiritual unfoldment. The astral system of a human being with 6, 12 by polarity, inner constellations revolving around the sun of the omniscient spiritual eye is interrelated with the physical sun and the 12 zodiacal signs. All men are thus affected by an inner and outer universe. The ancient rishis discovered that man's earthly and heavenly environment in 12-year cycles push him forward on his natural path. The scriptures that man say that man requires 1 million years of normal diseaseless evolution to perfect the human brain sufficiently to express cosmic consciousness. 1,000 kriyas practiced in 8 hours gives the yogi in one day the equivalent of 1,000 years of natural evolution, 365,000 years of evolution in 1 year. In 3 years, a Kriya Yogi can thus accomplish by intelligent self-effort the same result which nature brings to pass in 1,000,000 years. The Kriya shortcut, of course, can be taken only by deeply developed yogis. With the guidance of a guru, such yogis have carefully prepared their bodies and brains to receive the power created by intensive practice. The Kriya beginner employs his yogic exercise only 14 to 28 times twice daily. A number of yogis achieve emancipation in 6 or 12 or 24 or 48 years. A yogi who dies before achieving full realization carries with him the good karma of his past Kriya effort. In his new life, he is harmoniously propelled toward his infinite goal. The body of the average man is like a 50-watt lamp, which cannot accommodate the billion watts of power roused by an excessive practice of Kriya. Through gradual and regular increase of the simple and foolproof methods of Kriya, man's body becomes astrally transformed day by day and is finally fitted to express the infinite potentials of cosmic energy, the first materially active expression of spirit. Kriya Yoga has nothing in common with the unscientific breathing exercises taught by a number of other misguided zealots. Their attempts to forcibly hold breath in the lungs is not only unnatural, but decidedly unpleasant. Kriya, on the other hand, is accompanied from the very beginning by an accession of peace and by soothing sensations of regenerative effect in the spine. The ancient yogic technique converts the breath into mind. By spiritual advancement, one is able to cognize the breath as an act of mind, dream, breath. Many illustrations could be given of the mathematical relationship between man's respiratory rate and the variations in his consciousness. And we'll conclude there, because you can read the rest of this again in chapter 26 of Autobiography of a Yogi. This is, again, coming from the original version, which you'll find as a blue paperback. It's probably the same in Self-Realization's version that they copyrighted and released as well. But it's chapter 26 of The Science of Kriya Yoga. Now, let's take some time to break down what we've just gone through here. Essentially, what Shrikteshwar is describing is he's trying to break down a fairly complex procedure in just a few paragraphs. And the general idea is that the spine itself is related to, in a sense, the path of the sun, or the way the solar system and the planets rotate around the sun, how that affects a human consciousness. It's stated that if a human being could live in a healthy, stress-free, disease-free environment with that physical body living for 1,000,000 years, it would naturally develop sufficient capacity to express cosmic consciousness. And what's happening there is every time the physical form of the body on the earth goes around the sun, on what we would consider to be an astral level or a subtler level, the consciousness becomes better able to process its infinite nature, its infinite qualities. And with the practice of the Kriya Pranayama, giving awareness to the spine, pulling the current up through the spine, chanting through the chakras, what this does is it starts to bring conscious intention to those astral pathways or that astral aspect of our bodies. And by bringing conscious attention to it, develops it. So by practicing these various meditation techniques, the Kriya Yogi finds that their astral body becomes more pronounced, more easily developed. And the individual doesn't have to wait around for a million years for a healthy disease, in a healthy disease-free environment. Now, Shrikteshwar refers to the spiritual eye as though it is like the sun. And the sun, from a Vedic astrological perspective, is considered to be our soul or our Atman, that part of us which is beyond personality, beyond a more gross version of individualization. Now, the personality, that which most people confuse with the soul being, or using the term jiva, is our individualized life, which thinks it has a certain progression through the world, a certain group of likes and dislikes and so on. But it is by giving attention to the spiritual sun, we develop our inner cosmos. And Shrikteshwar specifies that this Kriya shortcut can only be taken by developed yogis with the guidance of a guru. Such yogis have carefully prepared their bodies and brains to receive the powers created by intensive practice. Now, our focus will be on deeply developed yogis. This is not a hard thing to achieve. It just takes a lot of time, attention, and dedication. This, I'm going to speak for a moment about what we might consider not to be a deeply developed yogi. Those are individuals who enjoy the idea of meditation, enjoy the idea of studying things spiritually, but don't really try to develop their capacity for contemplative focus, or don't really try to go deeply into their meditation to figure out, what do I need to do to be able to internalize my awareness and let go of attachment to all these external distractions? So a non-deeply developed yogi would likely be someone who is more interested in meditation either for relaxation purposes, which there's nothing wrong with that. We could use a little more relaxation and stress reduction in the world. Or they're more interested in the spiritual side of things because they want a community around them that has similar ideas. Or philosophically, they just like to have something spiritual to talk about. But the deeply developed yogi is the one who understands that profound meditation practice requires paying attention. And the deeply developed yogi, when that deeply developed yogi brings his or her awareness to the spinal pathway and does the particular breathing as taught in the Kriya Yoga practices, that deeply developed yogi is giving as much attention to each and every one of those repetitions or breaths as though his or her life depended on it. They're not just doing it mechanically. That is why you can see so many people practicing meditation, Kriya Yoga even, and you see them after 10, 20, 30 years, and they don't really seem to have realized a whole lot. They're more peaceful, they're more calm, their energy is good, they're more enjoyable to spend time with, and Mr. Davis would talk to me about this all the time. But they're not really treating every single Kriya as though it is profoundly important to pay attention to. When you live in your meditation in the same way you would try to live in the present moment, fully aware and awake in every moment, then you are truly accelerating this process of spiritual awakening. So when Shrikteshwar and Yogananda and Mr. Davis talk about these deeply developed yogis and how the deeply developed yogis can do these practices and wake up very quickly, again, it's not that they are truly any different in regards to the hardware that they have, meaning the body. The difference is that they are truly paying attention. In the same way that when a child learns a musical instrument, there's going to be one child who kind of learns a little bit, enough to maybe play three or four chords in a few years, but then there's going to be another child that ends up becoming a improvisational virtuoso in no amount of time at all, because the second child is probably paying profound attention to what is going on. So to be a deeply developed Kriya Yogi, what you do is no matter how simple your practice is, no matter what you are doing, you give your full attention to it. Now, many people misunderstand that, and they think that if they're giving their full attention to it and distractions arise or images pop up in their mind or things of this nature, that they're failing. That is not true. As long as you can say, there it is, there's a distraction, there's an image, there's a dream, I'm starting to nod off, but I'm now bringing my attention back to what is important, to the focus of the meditation, that is a successful practice. You are not successful, you are not being a deeply developed Kriya Yogi when you let yourself be overcome by sleepiness, where a distraction arises and rather than just banishing it and focusing on what is important, you start thinking about it, or you follow it down the little rabbit hole of thoughts. So we can all do this. The difference is in how much time and attention and with what kind of intensity do we give our practice and our techniques. So if we can think of the spinal pathway as an inner zodiac, and the zodiac is what? It is the perceived path of the sun and the planets from our vantage point on Earth. If the zodiac, if there's an external zodiac, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, and so on, well, there's an internal representation of that as well. You don't need to know astrology to benefit from this. But again, just like plants grow naturally towards the sun, animals grow old and die, things become mature. Well, our consciousness does the same thing. And I'm trying to remember if I already discussed this. Yeah, I believe I already discussed this in a podcast. When we think about Shrikteshwar's theory of the yugas, how human consciousness, as the solar system gets closer to the galactic center, human consciousness naturally evolves, understands the deepest mysteries of God, the universe, and everything. And as that solar system in its 24,000-year cycle moves away from the galactic center, well, again, it's just like the sun going down, things get sleepy, humanity loses its capacity to understand, to be awake, to be clear, and eventually goes back to sleep and we're in the dark ages again. And this goes on a spiral. And one of the retreats that we did with the Kriya Yoga Apprenticeship Program, someone asked me if this was applicable to all of consciousness here on Earth. And at first, I hadn't really thought about it too much, and I just shot back and said, no, I don't think so. I think this is specific to human consciousness. But the more I considered it, the more I recognized that if you go back through history, assuming you don't believe the Earth is only 6,000 years old, you will see that consciousness has evolved on Earth from the rock of the planet to single-celled organisms, to multicellular organisms, and so on, to great ecosystems. All this has happened over the course of a long time. And so if you break down those 24,000-year cycles, it would make sense that every time the solar system gets closer to the galactic center, a type of evolution occurs. It gets sleepy again, just like we wake up in the morning, do our work, go back to sleep, we get up the next day, we build upon our work. So it's likely that this influence of our solar system getting closer to the galactic center, causing evolution, that every time we go around, sure, we're going to go through the dark ages, back through the electric age, the silver age, and the golden age, then the descending golden age, silver age, electric age, and dark age again. But every time we go around, consciousness itself gets clearer, becomes brighter. Things evolve in regards to how life can express on this planet, which is why we moved from single-celled organisms to multicellular organisms, to these vast ecosystems, from primates, monkeys and apes to humans, and who knows what's possible beyond that. But these cycles occur due to the movements of nature. So that's a cosmic a galactic cycle, you could say, just like our planetary year, it's a yearly cycle, a solar revolution occurs, or a revolution around the solar system, causes this inner growth. So by bringing our attention to the chakras within the spine, whether it's through chanting through the chakras, resting our awareness within the chakras, or circulating life force through the chakras, we are increasing, with our own intention, the evolution of our inner zodiac. Now, how does the zodiac relate to this? Well, we're just going to discuss this for your own understanding, but you don't need to know it to benefit from the process, and I'll describe why here towards the end of this particular podcast. The zodiac has 12 signs in it, 12 signs. We have, the theory is we have 7 chakras. Now, the zodiac is only related to the first 6 chakras. So from the first chakra up to the spiritual eye. Now, why might the 7th chakra, why is it possible there's not a relationship to that 7th chakra? Well, the 7th chakra is said to be the 1,000-petaled lotus, the place beyond karma. So if our karma is related to our astrology and our inner zodiac as it relates to the outer zodiac, we're not going to have a constellation or planet related to the 7th chakra because it's beyond those things. Now, there are 6 chakras related to each zodiac. Now, that means that there is, in a sense, an upward movement. So as our energy or as our attention ascends up through the chakras, we're going to find that each chakra has a polarity, a positive and a negative side. I did cover this in the very first class in the astrological apprenticeship course. I believe I made this available online. I'll have to dig it up and see and put a link to it. But each chakra is related to a pair of signs, such that the root chakra is related to the signs Aquarius and Capricorn. Aquarius and Capricorn. Aquarius is the positive polarity of the root chakra. Capricorn is the negative polarity of the root chakra. The 2nd chakra, or the sacral chakra, is related to Pisces and Sagittarius. Pisces is the negative quality or the negative polarity of the sacral chakra. Sagittarius is the positive quality. The navel chakra, or the 3rd chakra, is related to Aries and Scorpio. Aries is related to the positive polarity of the 3rd chakra, Scorpio to the negative polarity. Taurus and Libra, these are both related to the heart chakra. The heart chakra, Taurus is the negative polarity, Libra is the positive polarity. The throat chakra is Gemini and Virgo. Gemini is the positive polarity, Virgo is the negative polarity. The spiritual eye, or the space between the eyebrows, that's the highest chakra we can get within the zodiac. Cancer is the negative polarity of the 6th chakra, and Leo is the positive polarity of the 6th chakra. Now, these polarities are related to the numerical, or the number of the sign. For example, each even-numbered sign is related to the negative quality. And by negative, I simply mean just like plus and minus. Whereas each positively numbered sign is related to the positive quality of the chakra. So Leo is the 5th sign of the zodiac. It's an odd number, so it's positive. The even-numbered sign, Cancer, is number 4, so it is negative. Gemini is number 3, so it's positive. It's an odd-numbered sign. Virgo is the 6th sign in the zodiac. 6 is an even number, so it is the negative polarity. Now, again, this is a whole... We could spend... I think I spent 2 hours describing this, so I'm going to do my best to dig up that video and stick it in the podcast notes so you can watch it on your own. But if we follow this... Well, then we find that the root chakra is associated with Saturn, because Aquarius and Capricorn are ruled over by Saturn. The second chakra is ruled over by Jupiter, because Pisces and Sagittarius is ruled over by Jupiter. The third chakra is related to Mars, because it's ruled over by, the third chakra is related to Aries and Scorpio. The heart chakra, Venus, because Taurus and Libra are ruled over by Venus. Gemini and Virgo, that's the throat chakra, and the planet that rules over those two signs is Mercury. And then the spiritual eye is the sun and the moon, Cancer for the moon, Leo for the sun. And those of you who study astrology, you will get a sense of how these things relate, because Saturn has qualities which are very first chakra oriented. Jupiter has qualities which are very second chakra oriented. Mars has qualities which are very third chakra oriented. So it matches up quite beautifully. Now again, if you are an astrologer, this can be interesting for you, because if you're able to look at someone's chart, well, then you can start to get a sense of, all right, well, I see what's going on in each of these signs, which tells me, is there something difficult happening within a particular chakra caused by a certain planet? And then by doing that, hopefully you can help to counsel individuals about what kind of problems those can cause and how to rise above it or move through it. That's one of the most profound roles of an astrologer, to be that kind of guide, not to be a fortune teller and so on, but to help an individual know if they can't get it from their own perception, if they can't just pay attention and get it, but to help to point out what is going on deep inside them in this astral inner zodiac so that they can learn to release attachment to it. Now, this is a difficult thing, because it is hard, number one, to develop a kind of rapport with someone such that you will trust them in that way if you do not have the kind of awareness on your own to recognize those things. It's just like when you see the blind spot in your friend's life, and every time you try to point it out to them, they resist it because they can't understand it at all. But if you have a friend or a loved one that deeply and profoundly trusts you, and you speak to them about a difficulty that maybe a little awareness would help, then a change can occur, even if they can't see it themselves. So ultimately, this kind of astrology really needs to be practiced between a relationship of a student and a teacher, where both the student and the teacher have good rapport and they trust each other, and the teacher, his or herself, is also aware, awake, and clear enough to not color what they see by their own bias or predispositions or points of view. And that is very hard to find. It's very hard to find, which is why ultimately it is better, in my estimation, for individuals to practice yoga and meditation rather than get caught up in their astrology, or going down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out which astrologer knows best. Because if you learn to practice Kriya Yoga and you just simply do the techniques and live the life as illustrated in the Yamas and Niyamas and the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutras, you will more than likely begin to transcend those karmas as they are theoretically stored within each chakra. I always loved Ramana Maharshi's comment when someone asked him, should we learn this particular kind of philosophy, the Samkhya philosophy, which outlines how creation happens, how consciousness relates to creation. And he came back with the statement, well, do you dig through the trash before you throw it out? Because you're going to throw out any of these ideas or philosophies anyway when you get to the truth. So when it comes to our spiritual practice, you don't have to dig into the planetary reasons why you're an angry person, a depressed person, or why your relationships don't work out. You don't have to do that. If you simply focus on living a lifestyle in accord with yoga and meditation, you will eventually rise above those things which trouble you. Of course, as I will say again and again, I am a strong proponent of counseling to help you, but you don't want to become addicted to counseling, and you don't want to turn it into a hobby. You want to use it for what it's appropriate for, and then through the practice of non-attachment, through the practice of meditation, you eventually learn to, with your own awareness, recognize what you need to do to live a more self-realized, God-centered, Christ-centered, Christ-consciousness life. And all of that is already outlined in the Yoga Sutras and the Bhagavad Gita. So you don't need someone to tell you more about your story. In fact, we have to remember that part of this whole process of Kriya Yoga and meditation is to let go of your story. Because it is your story that keeps you bound again and again to the suffering that you experience, because you want things to be a certain way, you want to live a certain kind of life, you want to have certain kinds of experiences. If you want to stay locked on that wheel, by all means, that's up to you. But that is not the purpose of our spiritual practice. That is not the purpose of our Kriya Yoga practice. So when it comes down to how does Kriya Yoga relate to astrology, in our current era, all you need to know is that there is an outer zodiac and there is an inner zodiac, and that your own personalized karmas are reflected in these zodiacs. But ultimately, you're not meant to go digging through it to have all the reasons why explained to you. From a Kriya Yoga perspective, you are doing what it takes to rise above those things. This is why I don't necessarily tend to recommend astrology for people who are on the spiritual path. If it's a hobby, something you're interested in talking about, wonderful. If you are a skilled counselor and you are able to work with individuals through their astrology, that's wonderful as well. But many of the people that I have met along the way, being an astrologer and a Kriya Yogi, it is very rare to find an astrologer who's willing to push someone past their astrology. And that makes sense, because if you're an astrologer, well, you support yourself by talking about astrology. So you don't want to push someone past something that's probably your livelihood. And every now and then you will find an astrologer who is also a profoundly spiritual and self-aware individual who can look into your astrological chart and through tact, through skillful means, can help guide you and encourage you through those little hang-ups that you've got. But whether you find a good astrologer that does that, we also have to recognize that we ourselves have to be able to hear what they are saying and apply what we have been told. So astrology can be very helpful, but I'm leery. I would prefer that someone focus on their meditation path. I would prefer that someone live their life, do their best, and not worry too much about their astrology. And you can know that by chanting through the chakras, by bringing your awareness to the chakras, by circulating life force through the spine, that will start to burn away and clear out those attachments to those planetary astrological hang-ups. Because in Vedic astrology, the planets, they're called grahas. Grahas, the Sanskrit word graha, which means to grasp or to seize. And so if you have various situations going on astrologically, what's really happening there is you are being seized by these planetary forces, and they're saying, you must experience this, you must define yourself through that. But by practice of yoga, by practice of these meditation techniques, you slowly release your, you become more slippery. The planets can't grasp you as easily. Sure, anyone who has a human body is going to experience various things. The human body is going to experience all sorts of things. The yogi recognizes that they are not their body. So whether their body is healthy or well, sick or diseased, well, the body has karma itself. And the role of the yogi is to recognize, I am not necessarily this body. That way, as we discussed in many texts, pleasure, pain, heat and cold, praise or blame, gain and loss, that is less troublesome to you because you know you are not those things. And in that way, you rise above these astrological influences, and then you no longer have to come back to this earth plane of the physical body because you no longer have the attachments or the proclivities that require a human body to work out certain things. It's not glamorous. Essentially, what you're doing is surviving long enough to exhaust your karmas so that you can move on. That's what happens when you have a body. And then in the meantime, as you practice yoga, you learn to turn your attention within and experience that inner freedom, such that when it comes time to drop the body, you just simply move on. And then you can exist in Hiranyaloka with Swami Shriyukteswar or any other astral planets or causal planets. And your journey continues. All you need to know is that by focusing on the spine, doing the meditation techniques that focus on these things, you are neutralizing your planetary karmas and you don't really have to worry about it. You don't really have to worry about it. If you want to use astrology for proper planning, in the same way that people use the almanac to plant healthy crops and so on, that's the original use of astrology. It wasn't meant to define us, our personality and what our life was going to be like. It was meant to give us the capacity to live in as much harmony with this physical existence while we are here as possible. They call that Muhurta, Muhurta, in Vedic astrology. And I find that to be an extremely useful branch of astrology for anyone. In the same way that it's useful to know that you don't plant beans in the middle of winter, or you don't try to grow spinach in the middle of summer. It's just common knowledge that has been lost over the years. And you will find that as you practice these techniques, deep in meditation, things might arise in your mind. Thoughts, memories, attachments, aversions, fears, joys, dreams, all numerous different types of things. And when you're practicing your meditation, these things arise. That is an indication that you are dissolving, releasing, purging your attachment to those experiences which could have been caused astrologically. Hopefully you understand what I'm saying there. That is why as a Kriya Yogi gets older, oftentimes they are less troubled by the things that happen in their life because they've already worked through those attachments internally. They've already worked through those attachments internally, which is why the true Kriya Yoga isn't simply turning yourself into a meditative zombie who's not aware of anything. The true Kriya Yogi is actively engaged in the process, which means if they sit down to meditate and their mind is filled with countless thoughts, images, ideas, attachments, well, if they are healthy-minded, they can continuously return their awareness back to the spine and the meditation and the breathing and let go of them and not be pulled into them and not wonder what's that all about. And when they do that, they are releasing their attachment to those planetary experiences. That is why it is a great joy if you are sitting in meditation and you are uncomfortable sometimes. That uncomfortableness is potentially the process of this inner purging going on. At the end of the Yoga Sutras and the chapter on the aloneness of seeing, there is a statement there where it says, sometimes, even after countless meditations of clarity and peace, a subliminal impulse will arise and disturb the meditator's awareness. Meaning, even the advanced meditator has that happen. And if you imagine the very beginning of meditation, it's like you are a cup way too full with all kinds of things, and you have to pour that out. Well, as you become more advanced in meditation, there's less there to pour out, but there may be a few things down the bottom of that cup. And so you might have years, weeks, months of profound meditation, and then all of a sudden, a subliminal trigger arises, and you become disturbed again. It doesn't mean you are failing. It means that there just happened to be more space or a deeper cup that it took a while to get to that disturbance. And when you first begin, those disturbances are everywhere. So as we meditate, as we hold our awareness within, as we focus our attention in this spinal pathway, we are doing the work. We are doing the inner astrology, and we're letting go of our attachment to the outer astrology. So this is a very basic way of understanding how astrology can be related to the Kriya Yoga process.
This episode of the Kriya Yoga podcast was made possible by donations from Kriya Yoga apprenticeship students and supporters of our Patreon community at www.patreon.com/Kriya Yoga.